Welcome to another episode of Life and Limb, a podcast from Thrive Magazine, all about living well with limb loss or limb difference. I'm Jeff Thiessen, publisher of Thrive Magazine and your podcast host. My guest this episode is Dion Chambers, a personal injury lawyer with Parlatore Law in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Dion is experienced with clients with a wide range of serious injuries, including amputation, brain injury, and psychological trauma as well. Her work with amputee clients has increased her awareness of the gaps in meeting our needs, particularly in the area of peer support. And so, not an amputee herself, she partnered with one to create a peer support group in their Niagara region. What's interesting, too, is that Dion is really involved in her clients' healing journeys, helping them through the medical system and advocating for their needs through her work as a litigator. And now she's bringing insights from her client needs and her experiences to the Amputee Coalition of Canada as its newest board member. Dion, welcome. How are you?
Good. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for being a part of Life and Limb. It's going to be really interesting from a lawyer's perspective, a litigator's perspective on our community and what you've come to know about us and what you're doing for
Yeah.
us too. So.
Yeah, good. Well, happy to share any insights I have for sure.
Wonderful. Hey, let's start with personal injury law and what that means. And I'm sure it means different things to different lawyers, certainly to different clients. But what I've come to learn about you really revolves around your reputation for exceptional client relations and a personable touch to support your clients beyond the boardroom or courtroom. And we may not always think of lawyers in that capacity. Your compassion is often mentioned too. So, what does personal injury law mean to you?
Well, I mean, personal injury law is it's a really specialized area of law. Not everybody can dabble in it, or generalists shouldn't be dabbling in it. It's very, very it's an intellectual area of law. We use the courtroom. We use court systems to advocate for our clients. So it's an intense area of law in the sense of advocacy. So personal injury means being an exceptional legal advocate. That's number one. Number two, it's gaining medical knowledge. So as a personal injury lawyer, we need to we become intimately involved with the medical system, about how doctors operate, about what kinds of treatment our clients get. And that requires a high level of medical knowledge. And sometimes doctors are surprised by the level of knowledge that we do gain. We have to, because advocating strongly for our clients means understanding their injuries from a medical perspective. Also, personal injury litigation is about using the accident benefit system. That's the no-fault insurance system. So when someone's involved in an automobile accident, they have access to no-fault benefits through their own insurance company, and that's access to treatment. So personal injury lawyers deal with our clients' own insurance companies to get them access to treatment that they need to recover for their injuries. So like physiotherapists and psychologists and occupational therapists. So it's setting up those kinds of treatment resources to help them recover for their injuries. And then the final aspect of personal injury law is the personal touch and the personal aspect. And my personal approach is advocacy kind of from the ground up or inside out. And kind of what I mean by that is that, really getting to know my clients on a level that would probably be considered relatively intimate in terms of their personal daily lives and their personal daily struggles. And that is the place that I root from, and advocacy springs from there. So I don't think you can be practicing personal injury law and not be a very personable and kind of deeply connected with your clients and their needs. So that's the personal aspect of it.
And even more than that, when we talked last, and this is my word, not yours, but you make house calls. So you say sometimes it's important to go to them as opposed to them coming to you, as I understood it, so you can understand their environment and the challenges within home. Do I get that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's two kind of important aspects to that. The first one is definitely I get to see them functioning in their environment, because that is extremely important for me. I get all kinds of information from that. I can see how they are ambulate around the house. I can see how they're interacting with their environment to see if their environment is appropriate for any kind of accommodation needs that they have. So that's number one. Number two, I also find that it makes me much more accessible to them because sometimes people in general, for some reason, I don't know why, seem to be intimidated by lawyers. Maybe it's what they see on TV, or they have this perception that that lawyers are kind of cold and high powered. And I think that coming into their home evens the playing field, and yeah, I think that makes for a much more workable relationship. They open up to me, and I gain all kinds of information there. But yeah, house calls, absolutely. Meetings in their homes, especially in the beginning, because getting out of the house is just kind of a challenge right in the beginning. Oftentimes they are still in wheelchairs and having some difficulty with transportation. So that's kind of how it started for me, is just visiting in hospitals and rehab centers, and then it transitioned to the home. And for my amputee clients in particular, it just has become a habit now that I go to them. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see how it would, I don't know if neutralize is the right word, but dis disinhibit maybe,
Yeah.
because you're right. When we say I need a lawyer, it's
Yeah.
generally a stressful time in our lives
Yeah.
for the most case. So,
Yeah.
from that compassion standpoint, and that I'm really interested in, and I'm sure there's got to be creativity with that. You're dealing with folks that are in a really challenging time in their life. So
Yeah.
how does that personal touch or that compassion, that empathy, how does that translate to their lives? And you said they feel better about you coming to their house, and there's more comfort with that. Do you see
Yeah.
any other sort of extensions of that?
Yeah, I mean, it makes me a way better advocate for them. It's really important for advocacy. Through the accident benefit system, finding supports that are appropriate for them is massive. So I know I shared with you the last time we spoke, an experience I had with one of my clients who became an amputee, and he didn't have a family. He lived alone. And he returned to his house really shortly after his amputation, and needed support. He needed a PSW, and he's a very, very private man. He did not want a PSW coming into his house, and unfortunately, in our system, family members can't get paid to do that job, even though they might be the most obvious choice. Unless they take an economic loss. So unless they leave a job in order to provide those services, then they can be compensated. But there is an exception, and the exception is for family members who have PSW or nursing certifications. So in this case, just because I knew how important it was to Darren, I mean, if I didn't, oh, I mean, my client, if I wasn't so involved in what his concerns were, probably it would have been just easier to say, nope, sorry, this is just how the system is. But I dug and dug, and I found case law with that exception, and the insurance company allowed his sister, who had a PSW designation, to do the work. So that was important for him. So that's number one, finding support. Also, there's strong advocacy, compassion, and personal touch results in strong advocacy, because when you know how your clients are experiencing their day-to-day lives and you know their struggles, it's very easy to advocate from that place, and you don't need to be, I think I used this phrase last time, you don't need to be a bulldog in the courtroom. When you know your client's needs, it comes across very easily, and it's not even about persuading the other side. they will accept that clients need this. They need access to money and access to treatment. So without that personal touch, I just don't think advocacy is as strong.
Yeah, I'll bet. And then it sounds the story you just told. I mean, to me, that seems like there was some creativity there, or maybe I don't want to say thinking outside of the box. That's pretty cliche, but maybe coloring outside of the lines a little bit to get your client what he needed, right?
Well, it was entirely within the lines, so not necessarily coloring outside of the lines, but I did dig deeper beyond just kind of what is commonly known knowledge in the industry. So talking to colleagues about it, they said, no, your client's out of luck, or the insurance company said, no, your client's out of luck. But I spent the time to find the supportive case law that I needed to make that argument, and it worked. So,
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Not so much coloring outside of the lines, but just finding solutions, right? Which is so much part of what our lives become as amputees, problem solving and doing things differently and finding solutions. So it sounds like you're a great advocate for that. And I
Thank
understand
you.
too that you bring a network of relationships in terms of treatment providers and medical experts to the table or to the case as well. So that's part of what you do also, right?
It is. And there's kind of two aspects to that. The one is the treatment team that we set up for Accident Benefits. So that would be physiotherapists and psychologists and occupational therapists. And everybody has kind of different strengths. And setting up the treatment team that's right for my clients is really important. I want involved treatment providers, and I want them to care. Because caring results in engagement, and engagement results in their needs being met. So I work very closely with them. I attend meetings with them. I always get updated and understand what's going on. And not all lawyers do that. Some just kind of let the treatment team kind of run that aspect of the legal case. But I don't. So that's one way that I like to stay involved. And the other is in developing relationships with medical physicians. That's another thing that happens kind of quite naturally when you are advocating for clients. So sometimes I need additional information or clarification in medical records, and just kind of make an appointment with the doctor and have a conversation. And I didn't realize that that was helping my clients. In a real way, but it did. Even talking to a psychologist to get some help for a client who needed some mental health support, I didn't think that I was. Anyway, it came across. The psychologist picked up how much I cared, and she made room in a schedule that really wouldn't have accommodated treatment. And so that is advocacy from compassion. That's not getting on the phone and saying, my client needs this. There's a legal, it's not about that. She sensed my caring, and so she made room in her schedule. Those kinds of relationships with medical doctors becomes important in their treatment as well.
You obviously have the gift of advocacy because it is a fine line, right? As an advocate, you need to be assertive, but that there's that, I don't know, line maybe where that can turn into more aggressive. So obviously you have the relationships with these professionals that they respect what you're
Yeah,
coming
and
at.
I think good advocacy is also it's using emotional intelligence. So sometimes it is really appropriate to be a bulldog. I have surprised myself and done that many times. When it's needed, it just comes out. But if it's not needed, it doesn't. You can advocate from a very even a quiet listening place. Advocacy takes many, many forms, and I think you're good when you just naturally employ the right tool in the right situation.
Is a lot of it listening? Active listening, kind of responding to
Oh yeah.
what you're hearing. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean active listening, it starts at the client level. If you're not listening to your clients, then you don't understand their needs. And then listening to the other side's position. I've been criticized before saying that I'm too objective. Maybe that is a criticism. I don't see it as such. I always listen to defense perspectives, and because there's off sometimes there's truth in there, or there's little nuggets. They're giving you little hints about where the weakness is in your case, and then you can go back and address those weaknesses and come out with a stronger position. So active listening is really, really key.
Yeah, for
But
sure.
then again, sometimes that bulldog comes out
You
and it's kind of fun. I was
it.
well, it was yeah, it was I have when I have experienced it in myself, it's I was in like a courtroom situation and started out just with regular, legal argument and defense. I can't quite he was playing to me. He was playing to me and making points that were wrong in law, but he was doing it very persuasively. So just all of a sudden, what came out is I'm like, Your Honor, my friend is a very persuasive speaker, but he is wrong. And then I went through point by point all the areas that he was wrong, and I didn't plan for it. It just happened. But it was effective. I won
And you
that.
won that. Yeah.
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 That's a great story. No,
Yeah.
you do what's needed.
Yeah.
Clients would all be different, right? We've as
Yeah.
amputees, we can get painted with that broad brush, but our challenges, our strengths, our weaknesses, they all vary. So, and I'm sure you see that. Are there things that you've learned from your clients that, in terms of commonalities, differences, strengths, weaknesses. What do you take away from this
Yeah.
community?
Yeah. Well, certainly, I mean, the one thing, I mean, from a more kind of spiritual or emotional perspective, I take strength from the experience I've had with your community. I think that going through the experience of losing a limb is significant. And I have watched my client's journey, and I have indirectly gained some strength in watching their journey, because watching their progress and acceptance of their new life circumstance. I don't want to use the word humbling. That's not right. I personally see strength in it. And kind of from a practical perspective, or like a legal perspective, I mean, I there are definitely I need to come out early in the gate when dealing with a new client who's lost a limb, and get home renovations done. That's a huge thing that needs to happen kind of right away, and getting on the ball and getting a treatment team set up right away to get them the support that they need when they're released from the hospital. So that's been something that I've learned has been very obviously needed in that situation. And through their accident benefits provider, if it happened in an auto accident, getting them a designation of catastrophic impairment. I know that kind of sounds like a legal word, but that's what gets them access to all of the services that they're going to need. So advocating hard and fast to get that whole treatment team set up, I've learned that that's been a really effective piece of their puzzle. And certainly another commonality among clients who've lost a limb is getting economic support. Oftentimes they can't get back to work right away, especially if their jobs and require physical labor, or something where their mobility challenges will really affect their job. So getting economic supports set up kind of right away, to help them into that transition, is something that they require and is a commonality. I know that this will probably lead a little bit into the peer support role, but definitely the commonality that I noticed, that is not legal, is a feeling of being alone and isolated in their experience. And That was definitely something that I noticed and saw as a hole in their treatment, because they, especially if their amputation is as a result of an auto accident, they have access to a bunch of treatment. In fact, they sometimes can get treatment exhausted, all these caring people coming into their lives and telling them how to live it. But what I noticed is that that doesn't affect their feeling of being alone and needing just a peer to chat with about practical things.
Yeah, I do. Yes, of course. And I do want to, we are going to talk more about peer support, because I know that you're a big proponent of that. When you've talked about loneliness, you've also talked about relationships with spouses, right? Where the dynamic changes, especially initially, where that spouse now can take has to or can take on more of a caregiving role, and that impacts the marital relationship. Yeah, talk about that a little bit, yeah.
It's I've seen it. It's very, very common, and I think it's very sad for everyone involved. I have definitely witnessed marital breakups, which is hard to see. But yeah, the dynamic shifts. Oftentimes, the spouse who has not experienced the amputation has moved more from a spousal role into a caregiving role, and that changes the dynamics of the relationship in a huge way. There's caregiver burnout that becomes a big issue in relationships, and what I did have noticed is that that loneliness, even for amputees who are in family relationships, it's still as much an issue as if they're not in family relationships, because the spousal support that they once received may have changed. And it's kind of a sad reality, but certainly one a pattern that I've noticed.
Yeah, but it's a sad reality, because so much can change. Like you talked about already, the new amputee may not be working. Their existing friendship circle sometimes changes. Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it, for everybody involved. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a complete lifestyle change, and especially somebody who was working and is not able to work anymore. And everybody needs a sense of purpose, and that's a huge, it takes a huge psychological toll on their mental health. And I don't know. I mean, psychological treatment is extremely helpful and supportive, but I don't think that it replaces the feelings of fulfillment that you get from working. I think working and making a contribution to the world is really important, and I have noticed with my clients a transitional stage where they don't quite know where to put their purpose, or they feel like it's lost. And with every, like, losing a limb is such a major life transition that, that transitional period happens. And then after the transitional period, when the loss of a limb just becomes kind of a fact in someone's life, and it doesn't become the focus of their day-to-day living, that's a lovely place for me to witness. My clients get to.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, the way we're socialized here in our culture, I mean, so much value is put on our bodies, right? It's almost, capitalistic, in that, like you said, we have a purpose and provide, and when that's taken away. But I think that extends too to our social network, where beer league hockey player isn't playing hockey or anymore, and then the friend circle is lost with that. So it's just so many tentacles of limb loss. But we know peer support is important. Yes. And you, I know, are a big proponent of that, obviously, as a co-founder of an amputee peer support group
Yeah.
in Niagara. So, tell us about that. Where did you see the need? I mean, the why is probably obvious, and we've talked about it, but as someone that isn't an amputee that is leading the charge for this, that's really encouraging and exciting for our community. So how did that
Yeah.
all begin?
Well, it began with my clients. So I had a couple of clients who were going through the same situation. And they both were amputees as a result of a traumatic motorcycle accident. So they had that commonality. And they both had treatment providers around them all the time and lots of support. And I just found that with both of them, what they were needing was to have in their life someone who they who's had had the same experience and they could just chat with about practical things and also just to get some emotional support because it's such a kind of a unique experience and you not necessarily all their needs will be met from through the medical system. And so I asked their occupational therapist to connect them with the group, and there weren't any in the region. Well, there were a couple of, there was one that was no longer active. So yeah, I teamed up with a local amputee who's a certified peer support worker, and we got together, and he facilitates the group. So, which is extremely helpful because he's, I don't know how long he's been an amputee for. Maybe you would know, 10 years, maybe?
And you're talking about Chris Garner, who is quite
Chris,
well
yeah.
known in Niagara. Yeah, probably
Yeah.
getting to that point now. And
Yeah.
a very immersed in para sport, para golf,
Yeah.
peer visitation, like you said, through Amputee Coalition of Canada. So yeah.
Yeah. And just from a from an emotional person, I don't know if emotional is the right word, but he's very mature into his experience. And when I meet with Chris, I don't notice anything. Okay, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't find that he's identified with his amputation. It doesn't define him. He's very involved in the community as an advocate, but he doesn't carry a victim mentality. And I what I find with clients in the beginning when they're experiencing the transition into their new life situation, that I found for both of them, connecting them with Chris, I could see that they became hopeful about what their endpoint could look like. Because in the because especially if you know they're not working, they're not as involved socially, they can't engage in their hobbies in the way that they once did. There is a lot more time sitting around at home, isolated, and depressive thoughts are very common. And I found that creating that space for them where Chris would come in and even share practical supports in a very, Chris is very open. So just talking about, practical considerations in a very open way, I could just feel the re like the first time we got together, I could feel the relief in the room, like from my clients that I brought. They, just having someone who has gone through the experience and has some practical tidbits to share and also just some words of wisdom help navigating the medical system. I know that they experienced a huge sense of relief with Chris's and insights and navigating through the medical system. So I think it's been very beneficial in their life and has, I think it's plugged that hole totally.
It's great. And I was going to ask you, like, what is the spirit within these groups? And you talked about the practical aspect with probably talking about componentry and excuse me, types of knees or hands, elbows, whatever it may be. But there's probably fellowship as well. And I would think humor. I mean, losing a limb isn't funny, but things that happen to us can be, and
Yeah,
so
for sure.
does that get shared there?
Yeah. And honestly, it kind of depends on who's there and what the dominant need is. So sometimes somebody has a real practical issue and the conversations revolve very much around that practical issue. Sometimes it's more just a getting together, and there's a sense of bond and commonality through a very unique shared experience. And I find that it's exactly that. There's a lot of humor. There's a lot of storytelling about funny things that happened. And I think everybody enjoys that and needs that kind of light feeling.
Yeah. Maybe you've noticed this, and I certainly have, as an amputee of 48 years. We see each other quite quickly, when we haven't met strangers, I mean, right? And in the airport, in the grocery store, and sometimes we'll approach each other, sometimes we don't. But there is that sort of nod of brotherhood or sisterhood. But what I find intriguing, when we do connect and have a chat, very rarely, like most of society, will ask us what happened to you. We don't go down that path so quickly. I think it's because we all know we have our own story. Something, traumatic happened, and that's not what we lead with. Do you find that in peer support as well, or is that a place to talk about the accident, so to speak, or the injury?
My experience has been that they seem to need to talk about it. So my experience was that it does come up quite fast, but maybe that's because they're still in the kind of more acute healing stage, and maybe still a little bit identified with the experience. And I think so perhaps, I mean, perhaps you're meeting people who are kind of further down the journey, and the why or the how is less important to you now that you're kind of past an acute period. But certainly in our gatherings, that is not the predominant thing that's talked about. Like, somebody may share a story for 5 minutes or so, but it's not, it kind of was more to my surprise that these gatherings were way more uplifting than I thought they would be.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and I think you're right. It probably depends on age and stage of life. I can tell the story. I came back from the Caribbean vacation, sat beside a single arm amputee. So I'm a double arm. So look, obviously a little bit different. But we chatted for 4 hours about the bane of our existence being bread bag tabs, those little plastic things that we can get them off, but we can't get them back on the bag, and we don't care. And how to start a lawnmower, and how to use a hammer and a nails, and that kind of thing. We've left that, connected, but no idea what his trauma was. But yeah, we were both well down the path. But taking it back, kind of a final question, Dion. I mean, you see the rehabilitation side. You see the dependence transitioning to independence, the medical side from all aspects, the legal side, how you had mentioned earlier too about identity and how some gravitate to identity as an amputee, or in others, it's part of a greater identity. So for those that are new to the experience, just starting in that journey, as you would probably meet your clients in that stage, of words of wisdom, advice, observations you've made, cautionary tales. What can you offer to folks that are just beginning life with an amputation?
Well, I mean, I think, if I put my legal hat on, which probably would be appropriate, I mean, I think that if the amputation happened as a result of an accident, I think choosing the right lawyer would be a really, really important first step. Every lawyer is different, and choosing a lawyer that they connect with and that will be available for them, I think is a huge first good decision to make. And apart from that, I think the peer support, getting involved in peer support from a really, really early stage, would be very beneficial. I think it's absolutely needed. Just the clients that I've witnessed their journey, they needed it. They needed to know that it really was not the end of the world. They needed to know that it is the loss of a limb, and that's it. It's a limb, and it's a circumstance that will affect how they function. But that's it. It's just a circumstance, and healing happens, and peace comes. And I think that finding, talking to someone who is further down the journey, as we all do, we all need to, in any life challenge, we all need, it's always so helpful to find somebody who's further down the journey than you are, and to find hope and inspiration there, and knowing that you'll end up in a great place in the end.
Great insights. Great closer there. Yeah, really appreciate it, your perspective. And then it certainly comes in association with the Amputee Coalition of Canada, who are waving the flag for peer support, and that's mostly done by amputees. So someone that is kind of on the outside looking in, it's really great to hear how you see the importance of peer support for all of us, which, yeah, we've all hopefully benefited from it at some point in our lives. So, yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for all you do for our community outside of the courtroom and the boardroom. It's
Well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate that.
you're welcome. Great to have you as an ally and a champion for us. So, with that, this has been Life and Limb. Thank you for listening. If you're in need of legal advice regarding a personal injury, please reach out to Dion at, and here is her email address, D as in Dion, Chambers, dchambers@parlatorlawyers.com. I hope I say that right. And that's Parlatore. Lawyers.com, and you can find them at the website there too. If interested in finding an amputee support peer support group near you, contact the Amputee Coalition of Canada, again, which Dion is part of, now is a new member of the board of directors. And you can read about others who are thriving with limb loss or limb difference and plenty more at thrivemag.ca, and you'll find our previous podcast episodes there too. Until next time, live well.